podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or support the podcast on patreon.com/fisheriespodcast or our new Teespring store. Today we are previewing another podcast put on by past guest Aaron Bunch and Dion Kerr. They are covering a very important topic in the American Fisheries Society, and I'll let Aaron go over exactly what the show is going to cover.
Sure, Nick. Thanks very much for having us. Dion, thanks for joining us as well. Dion and I joined forces to put together a podcast specifically looking at diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we want to make it very specific to fisheries. We've teamed up with the American Fisheries Society. They're supporting this podcast. We'll have information that's going to be placed on a website. It'll be specifically diversity.fisheries.org, and there's going to be tons of resources for people to be able to look up, and then we'll also have our podcast linked. Dion, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I guess I'd like to add to both Aaron and I, diversity and inclusion is one, it's very important to both of us. We feel that important to recognize within the workspace, and so we're excited and we're happy that we're doing what we're doing.
So there's an undeniable gap in diversity within the fisheries profession. You pretty much see it anywhere you go. I've lived it for 15 years, having really worked directly with a student or biologist of color. Diversity and inclusion, they're critical components of education and employment, which ultimately leads to better workplace environments and higher productivity and profitability. And most importantly, it leads to happier people. There are clear social, political, and ethical moral benefits to it all. And our goal with this podcast is to be part of the solution, which is to create equitable access and inclusive research circles for communities historically underrepresented in natural resources and specifically fisheries. So everyone, it's time to break down the barriers and biases while working towards improving diversity throughout the fisheries profession. You know, we're going to cover topics such as, you know, defining what diversity, equity, and inclusion really is. We're going to have episodes specifically on Black Lives Matter. That's very important to know and understand given the current context in society. But we're going to have some fun with this too. We're going to have a lot of fun with this too. We're going to take a deep dive into the Hutton Program, which is AFS for folks entering the profession. We just had a really cool discussion with this new initiative called MISS, Minorities in Shark Sciences. So that's going to be fun.
This is Julie. As a woman in fisheries for close to 20 years, I do really applaud your efforts and look forward to having way more conversations about all the different types of diversity within our field.
Yeah, and this is Brett. After sort of collaborating and communicating with a bunch of the undergraduate students coming through Iowa State University right now, and it's certainly something that Iowa State is trying to address in their natural resource department. Beyond, it's certainly something that in today's society might be a touchy subject, but certainly something that you can't be too scared to arrest. So students that are coming through the ranks right now and they're looking for employment are want to be have their voices heard and have, you know, the same opportunities as other students despite their whatever background. I certainly appreciate you guys really diving into this topic. I'm looking forward to all the episodes you guys will be putting out.
Hey, well, thanks a lot. You know, it's tough. It's not easy to discuss these things, but it's something that we need to tackle both in the profession but as society as a whole.
This is Susie. Dion, did you want to add something to the conversation?
As far as podcast locations, we have tossed around the idea too for throwing some up on YouTube. European Carp Anglers that I watch, they do a podcast series as well, and they also put their uploads on YouTube as well, and I thought that was kind of interesting.
Now you have to promise to send us the link to the European Carp Fisher person.
Oh, I can definitely send you that. Watch some Danny Fairbrass. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, Dion is an expert or European style carp angler.
Yep, it's going to be a good weekend. Got two big buckets of corn boiled up. So some sweet feed mixed in there. It's going down.
You throw the strawberry jello in there too?
Oh, you already know. That is a staple for me. Yeah, I'm definitely a strawberry jello guy.
You gotta promise your listeners one bling tip in episode.
I can definitely do that. Yeah, I would love that. See, we need diversity not only as people in the workspace, but as the fish we fish for. It's time for Americans to get on the carp page now. It's interesting, that's for sure. I know I get a lot of crap for being a carp guy. Yeah, we were doing some trawling this week. We pulled up a few carp. So hey, everyone on the boat's just like, oh, let the carp whisperer get it out of the net. Let's see how delicately he handles it. It's funny. But
we just retrofished some lakes, some homeowners association lakes, and just north of Little Rock. And oh, golly, one carp jumped out of the water and hit me in the leg, and it seriously hurt.
They'll come at you like a missile or torpedo, rather.
Right. So when is your first episode coming out?
It's actually going to come out right after this, right after we finish this discussion. Your listeners will be able to jump right in and get a taste for what this podcast is all about.
It's exciting. They got to tune in and find out, right?
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us in the pilot episode of the Fish Diversity Podcast. Fish are amazing creatures with a diverse set of colors, shapes, and sizes. They are truly a diverse group of animals. So are humans. This podcast is more about people than fish, which is also the case in fisheries, believe it or not. Any fisheries manager will tell you it's about working with people. The fish are the easy part. Here we focus on people and on extremely important topics, including the benefits of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the field of fisheries and aquatic sciences. Some topics may be uncomfortable at times, but this will be a safe zone from which everyone can learn. Although this is an initiative led by Clemson University students and supported directly by the American Fisheries Society, it applies everywhere and to everyone and transcends fisheries. We strive for everyone to feel involved and included, no matter your country of origin, age, ethnicity, gender, religion, sexuality, and disability. Hosts and guests are sharing their personal views, which they hold as their own. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to introduce the co-host, Dion Kerr.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. As we begin to start this journey, Aaron and I would like to invite all of you to come prepared with an open mind, ready to think critically. I'd like to follow up that statement by saying, generally, humans struggle between what is right and wrong. Our personal morals and ethics are shaped by cultural norms and the ones that surround us, including our family, friends, classmates, and colleagues. Our podcast would like to critique your philosophy by challenging some of your personal beliefs regarding right and wrong. I want you to ask yourself this. Is the way I'm viewing this situation or issue correct, or is it wrong? What is it that I'm not seeing? These are great questions to start with, and it is very important to answer them honestly. Try not to find an answer based on what benefits you, but what's centered around the truth or what matters.
All right, so Dion, it's awesome to see this thing come together. We've been talking about it for a while, and we're here.
Yeah, Aaron, this was very spontaneous for me, and I'm happy that you've asked me to permanently join you on this journey.
Yeah, this is the first of many podcast that we hope continues into the distant future. First, we'd like to introduce ourselves, kind of give the audience an idea of why we thought this podcast was needed, why we chose to start it up, and share some future topics we'll cover. I'll also spend some time with Dion based on his experiences of beginning his journey in the fisheries profession. But without further ado, Dion, please let us know who you are and what you're all about.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. I'm a young biracial male. Finished my undergrad at Bowling Green State University, located in Bowling Green, Ohio. Currently, I'm working with the Ohio Department of Natural Resource Division of Wildlife as a research technician. Our office is responsible for managing the entire West Basin of Lake Erie. Amidst this pandemic, I was fortunate enough to still hop aboard and join such a great group of biologists here, just to be so incredibly fortunate to have this job while this pandemic's still going on. Everyone here, they all love what they do. They get stuff done. But at the same time, we all have fun around the office still when we still can be around. So
yeah, and you're heading on your way to Clemson in the winter, right? Starting January, you're going to join us at the lab here.
That's right. Yeah. So thankfully and fortunately, I got linked up with Troy. I'll be joining the squad come January this spring. Yeah. So I'll be looking at largemouth bass habitat for my master's, and as well as was some Alabama bass or habitat assessment. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're looking forward for you to get down here. When you refer to Troy, we're talking about Dr. Troy Farmer at Clemson University, kind of starting out his program, been down here for, I think this is going on his third year. So I think I'm fresh in the Clemson University community. I just started as a PhD student in January, joined the lab like back in the fall. It's kind of a lab manager type position until I started class. I identify as a straight white male with pronouns he, him, and his. I came back to pursue a PhD in fish and wildlife after spending 12 years in the fisheries profession as a fisheries biologist, working in several states, including Arizona, North Carolina, Virginia. I did my master's work down in Florida. And you might be asking what motivated me to create and co-host this podcast. Honestly, and this has come straight from the heart, and there are a lot of reasons for this, but I've not worked directly in a work unit that has had a person of color. And I asked myself why that is, and there are many reasons, but we can dive into that in the future podcast episodes. Also, I don't like what I'm seeing in the world today, and I want to speak out and speak up. I don't want to remain silent. I want fisheries and aquatic researchers, managers and biologists, I want to help facilitate a positive change. I also have a passion for making the world a better place for my kids. And so that's the why. That's why I'm here. So to lead things off for this podcast, we'd be remiss not to discuss the current societal landscape in the U.S. There have been numerous recent situations of injustices to the Black community. The American Fisheries Society recently put out a statement of solidarity in response to recent events. This comes directly from the top AFS leadership, who have all signed the statement. You can see it on www.fisheries.org, but I feel like it's important to read it in full for our audience here, Dion. To be silent is to be complicit. George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor have been added to the long list of Black victims of racism and inequities in our nation. The American Fisheries Society recognizes the pain and anger that people feel in response to these recent events. We stand in solidarity with the Black community against racial biases and injustices, and we support our colleagues, students, friends that are impacted by these actions. As AFS members, we are connected through our passion for fishes, fishing, and the environment. All spaces should be safe and welcoming to everyone, but unfortunately, we do not all share the same experiences in these settings. AFS rejects discrimination and harassment by any means and currently operates under the recently revised guidelines of the AFS Standards of Professional Conduct, and they provide a link there. AFS strives for the advancement of equity and inclusion in the fisheries profession and beyond, and every AFS chapter, section, and subunit has the responsibility and power to accomplish these goals. Okay, so Dion, what do you feel when you hear that statement?
Man, that's powerful, man. That's incredible. And it's very comforting, especially to be, you know, one that falls into this minority group being biracial, that an organization that I am professionally seeking a career in has such a supportive stance for people like me. To know that I have support from the organization and as well as the communities that surround it, it generates a big confidence when pursuing a career in this field, because I know that I'll feel included, and I know that others will, if they don't understand, they're open and willing to hear me out. And that means a lot. So I'm grateful for what AFS is providing, and I look forward to see the change and their actions in the future. So
yeah, and I appreciate you saying that. And I mean, I appreciate the words that are on this, but like you said, it's all about how the members as well put things into action.
Yeah.
So this is a great step. This is amazing to see by top AFS leaders. Mm-hmm. And really, I hope with this podcast that me and you are putting on, and we've worked with a lot of other people to come up with concept, equal opportunity section, to figure some important conversations out, but we'll get into more of that later. So Dion, as a biracial man living, working, and studying in the U.S., you know, some of those incidences that I mentioned before with George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor, how has that affected you personally?
Oh, man, those are typical situations that have been going on in America for years. And particularly with the Ahmaud Arbery robbery case, that when the public began to know about that, that was 2 weeks old. And I think people are missing a big concept with that, was the fact that, you know, if that wasn't leaked, just had this black man maliciously murdered by white people, so to speak, out of racial intent. And you could mask that and just say, you know, they were just defending something. But I mean, we've seen the video.
A black man running through a neighborhood, minding his own business, just jogging.
Yep. Just to have your life ended like that. And it just goes to show you that it's very hard after seeing that to just feel confidently in denying that these racial thoughts and intentions still exist in America. Because like I said, it's hard to not ask, well, how often does other cases like this occur during a year where a black man is minding their own business and they might not be killed, but they're just still harmed or beaten in some sort because of these thoughts. And then it's unfortunately masked by laws like in Florida, like Stand Your Ground, where you can get away with shooting people like this, or people are able to somehow be above the law, taking actions into their own hands. Because originally with Ahmaud Arbery, it was, well, he was looking in windows and he could have been trying to steal stuff out of abandoned houses, you know, and then you have these laws that protect these types of things. So with George Floyd and the other cases in Ahmaud Arbery, unfortunately, Breonna Taylor is not seeing justice, but these two men, thankfully, were seeing justice in society. And these individuals are seeing they're not above the law. So it's good to know that society is hearing and seeing these issues, and action is coming up. So
yeah, and there's a lot of police reform type movement that I've seen here lately.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and amidst the protesting, I love seeing the officers themselves joining the protests. To me, that speaks the most, because this isn't about trying to just fully shame the police as a whole, but to just see that among their work peer pressures and cultural beliefs, there are members of police departments who see this these wrongdoings happening, and they're speaking out to
you. You hit the nail on the head there. There are many, many amazing police officers, and there may be some conservation police that listen to this podcast. In American Fisheries Society, state agencies and federal agencies, there are dedicated law enforcement members put their lives on the line for the sake of fisheries and wildlife. We're in this podcast no way discounting what police officers do, but what we're trying to do here is for people to think through some of the systemic biases that really resonate, that you don't even really, as a white person myself, don't always understand, don't always catch on, think it's a norm, just little things. And so these are the types of things that we're going to have conversations on in this podcast. And they're not going to be easy. Some of this stuff's going to be uncomfortable, but we just want to open the floodgates of positive change and conversation on this topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, Aaron, to, you know, go off of what you just said, these systemic biases they're not easy to see nowadays. And, you know, obviously we don't always know somebody's motives, but I know people like to think that because it's not 1970 or, you know, the 60s where it's just blatantly obvious, or someone just makes it clear to a person of color or some minority group that they do not like them, and they're making their employment choices or in general their daily lifestyles to avoid and oppress that group of individuals. Clear, it's just not obvious anymore these days, but that just because you don't see it or don't catch it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And that's why Aaron and I both would like to encourage all of our listeners to, if you have black friends, if you have any minority group friends, any of your minority friends, you should always just listen to what they have to say, because 9 times out of 10, we're not making up our stories that we have to tell about being racially profiled or being oppressed because we're homosexual. So it's the best thing you could do is listen to what they have to say, because there's nothing fun about making that up, about trying to create life problems that none of us want to have.
You know, and something just occurred to me, Dion, in our field, there's a lot of talk of adaptive management in natural resources and how you learn from the past to improve upon things on the future, and then you experiment and you learn and you move on into some positive management for an ecosystem, right? Or for all systems, human systems, ecosystem, the whole gamut.
Yeah.
And people could think about it in those terms as well, like learn from the past, don't dwell on what you've done in the past. When you have those conversations with your minority friends or colleagues, learn from it and make a little change here and there until you ultimately followed that adaptive management framework in your own way in terms of how you perceive and act towards other people. And slowly but surely, things are going to be more positive for others around you.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's going to help improve one's self-awareness.
So, yeah.
But
yeah,
as far as how things have affected me, it's one of those things where it's hard to see all the injustices that are going on. And it's hard to remain silent. And I think the AFS statement that said to be silent is to be complicit is right on. I personally want to be more vocal about this. I personally want to be a part of the positive change, because the one thing we do know about people is that a lot of times people can treat each other pretty poorly.
I think one of the biggest things I've learned as well, after these few recent horrific cases that came up, is people are stubborn. You know, when other cases of police brutality that have occurred, like Eric Garner, the Mike Brown cases, all of those cases that were years back from now, I was younger at the time, but I just didn't know how to respond or how to be what politics were. And as I've gotten older now, I have these discussions with my friends, and I had a great conversation just talking about this issue last night with a good friend of mine. And we both have differing views in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement. And then, there's the counter with the All Lives Matter movement or so. But I think the biggest thing I learned out of that conversation was people are stubborn. It's hard for them to change.
You mentioned the whole Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. And there was this great analogy on social media that I saw. And it was, you have all these kids and their parents in a playground. One kid gets hurt. Does every kid get treatment when one kid is hurt? That is the epitome of what's happening with Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. We know intrinsically, and all lives should matter.
Yes. Okay,
right?
Yeah.
But the Black community is hurting. They've been talking about this type of scenario for a long, long time.
Yep.
And it's up to everyone to start opening their eyes.
Yeah. And the amount of excuses and denial to want to hear these cries coming from the Black community is incredible to me. There is so many excuses that come up that have to stem off of just selfish desires. I think just hearing that Black Lives Matter means my life should matter more than yours, and countless individuals are telling you that's not what that's saying, and it's still not resonating that's what that actually means, is incredible to me.
Yeah.
Because, and I will say it, Black Lives Matter, that movement, that saying is not saying that my life should matter more than Aaron's life or any white person's life for that matter. It's simply just saying that I am hurting and I need your help. And that's it. It's not saying that we want to be valued more than someone. Now, I get it that there are some bad eggs within the organization, within the movement. Usually that's what people would refer to as Antifa, the anti-fascist individuals. But I mean, if we're going to pull this card, then how is that making any different than when people try to say, oh, there's a few bad eggs within, the police force or so, but we shouldn't discredit, their actions or so we should discredit those.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest thing here is to keep that in mind, that no one's trying to say their life is better. It's really shocking and depressing to hear many Americans not understand that, because it's a simple statement that to me is being rejected by selfish desires. So,
and I'm sitting here thinking, what is somebody on the other end of this podcast thinking right now? This isn't a podcast where we are just going to try to smash white people.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not.
This is not a situation where we're going to intentionally make people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But even within family dynamics, in some families at a white dinner table, this stuff is not comfortable to talk about, and we avoid it.
It's not.
Now, some families are more open to discussion than others. We're talking to an entire profession here, Dion. There are going to be all sorts of different people, some of which are probably not going to listen to the information solely because of its content. And those people are probably the main ones who need to hear this stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess my whole point in saying this is American Fisheries Society right now, we are becoming a more diverse society. It has not always been that way in the past. As with many other societies, many other professions, it was historically dominated by white males. Okay, that's changing. It's a good thing to have diverse viewpoints and diverse people. It makes the group stronger to have a lot of different ideas and backgrounds.
Yeah.
The main point here is we want people just to listen to us. We want people to understand
what's
going on. We're not trying to blame you personally. Listener, we're not trying to blame you personally whatsoever. Just listen to us, hear us out, and think logically for yourself.
Yes.
And as Dion mentioned earlier, think about what's right and wrong and critique your own logic. And that's why we're here.
Yeah.
So, Dion, what are some of your experiences in STEM fields and in particular fisheries?
It's a great question, Aaron. So obviously I'm still young, so I have years under my belt. But as I've gone through my classes at Bowling Green and close interaction with professors who are, you know, people who have been in the field professionally for years, I would say they've all been positive. You know, in these classes, I am typically the minority 100%. Even as a male, that it seems to be my classes at Bowling Green were dominated by females, definitely, you know, white females and even more black or other minority females. But it never felt like that. And that's what matters. You know, your race or ethnicity to me wasn't the outnumbering race or ethnicity in the classes or in the lab. You just don't feel out of place because the community, again, seems to have support and understanding of people like me. So you never feel like an outcast. Fisheries specifically, my undergrad advisor, if you want to call him that, was great. I'm going to name drop him, Jeffrey Miner at Bowling Green. Great professor. Love that guy. That dude just would do all he cares about is what kind of experience and anything he can teach you. What can he give you? And it seems like that's what it's been like the majority of my time in fisheries.
That's really cool stuff, man. Well, I think it's a point in the podcast where we can talk about the Hutton program for high schoolers. This is a program specifically for juniors and seniors. The mission of the Hutton program is to stimulate career interest in fishery science among young people from underrepresented groups. And get this, you get all this professional experience and you receive a $3,000 scholarship. Pretty awesome. So if you are a potential Hutton participant, please go to the website, hutton.fisheries.org. If you can donate, that's great too. Hopefully a lot of our listeners will put in some money, donate. You can either do that through the donate button on hutton.fisheries.org or when you register or renew your AFS membership. So let's get back to the podcast.
Is there any particular example that you'd like to share that was a situation where you just didn't feel comfortable?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, first, college is a big difference. You are, I think, that statement you made that in terms of academia, it's a more welcoming environment. And I think that's going to be across the majority of colleges. But, you know, high schools, which are, you know, your local towns, all your locals, it's different. Outside of school, there's plenty of situations. I'm into cars and racing and things like that. So I like to go to the drag races. We fortunately in my area have a Summit Motorsports Park. So it's basically a cream of the crop brand right there. I mean, that's the label for racing essentially. essentially. So there's some NHRA stuff that goes on. So that's professional drag racing for the people who don't know. And then there's plenty of entertainment racing events that go on. But when you go to these events, and this is relevant as of right now, and you see these Confederate flags flying everywhere and people decked out in just Confederate gear, that becomes to be very unwelcoming. You can just ease in on the conversations around you and the faces staring at you funny, like you don't belong. There's nothing fun about that at all. And at the bare minimum, the flag already just puts you in this doubtful mindset that you're in the right area. So I think the abolishment, or at least moving it to, museums and places that are there to just provide a history lesson, I think that's a great step, a step in the right direction, because it might not seem like much to other people, but I would say confidently to a lot of people, for a lot of people of color, when they step into an entertainment event or when they just see people flying Confederate flags on the back of their vehicles, we already are just like, we don't want to associate with that person, because you're already just in that mindset that they're probably not going to like me or have secondary thoughts about me because of this color of my skin. Yeah. As I've said before, there is nothing fun about that feeling whatsoever. it's intimidating at some point, and frustrating.
That's powerful stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand that, how it makes other people feel. And because it's so entrenched in racism and slavery. Yeah. And then there's the whole tradition and heritage argument. It's one of those situations where, it just gives you kind of a bad feeling in your stomach. Mm-hmm. Geez, I know one of the worst things I had to deal with in Virginia was just driving down I-95 and there being this giant Confederate flag flying right near the exit that I live.
Yeah.
It didn't necessarily represent all the people that were in that area. And it was just one of those freedom of speech things where they had some small plot of land that they had the ability. I don't even think they're from Virginia who set that flag up, but it's just stuff like that really just puts a sour taste in your mouth. But hey, everybody, we want to keep this related to fisheries as well. So you're going to see all sorts of stuff in terms of fisheries. Dion and I, in this episode, we were focused on introducing us personally to you. Dion was going to give us some of his experiences in the profession. So how has being a person of color impacted your career choice, Dion?
So that's another good question. I actually wanted to go into law, and what I changed career paths in college. So my second year, I still wanted to be in natural resources, but I wanted to be in the law enforcement side. As I changed careers, I can't help to look back and just say to myself, I don't think I would have fit in there. And obviously there's plenty of people of color who are a part of law enforcement. But I originally was starting to go down the path for law enforcement in college. And eventually, once I changed careers over to the biology side, I look back on the law enforcement choice, although it was more influenced by family. So my brother, he's in law enforcement. He's more in the judicial part of things now. But I look back in outside of my family influence for that career choice, I don't think that was the choice for me, because being a person of color, it felt like I was going down an area I didn't belong in. And that's not to discredit law enforcement or to put a label that law enforcement is a racist organization. It's just something culturally that has taken over my mind and is not, it's not a truthful and a accurate response for law enforcement, I would say. But because that simple quality of mine, though, has been, it was a big influence by my career change. Now going into the science field, it's not that I feel like I don't belong, because I've all of my experiences, I've said I feel included as I go down this path. It was still not the easiest choice, because there isn't many Black individuals within the STEM field. So it's like, why is that? Am I going to be good enough? Will an employer see me as good enough, or will my, you know, will the color of my skin turn the employer off from choosing me for a job position? As far as fishery goes, like I've mentioned before, it doesn't seem to be that way at all. I'm not a preacher or supporter of the statement of seeing things colorless. The employers here really don't seem to see you like that. It's simply just, this guy seems like he's got it, so I want him. There's no secondary thoughts about my name that comes up. They see you and they see the color of your skin. There's no weird looks or anything like that. As far as being in fisheries or being in the science field, and even my professors, everything has been great. I fortunately have no complaints.
Yeah, and like I said before, that's awesome, and it shows that things are starting to change for the better.
So Aaron, after having said all that, and since we're on this kind of topic of, you know, racial biases and things like that, have you ever been discriminated against?
I'm a big burly white guy that can sometimes be, it look like I'm intimidating. I'd like to think of myself more of a big teddy bear. You know, I hunt and fish and I'm outdoors a lot. There can often be this stigma of stereotyping me as an individual. Nothing to the extent that you've described or that we've seen here recently. I have a Southern accent. I've lived in places where there were very few Southern accents. So I've had some comments regarding my Southern accent and my intelligence level in the past. So that's one thing. The thing that bothers me the most is where people feel comfortable saying racist things around me sometimes.
Yeah.
In the past, I have not like given them any indication of whether or not I believe what they say or don't believe what they say. I just stand there. I don't nod my head. It has gone in one ear out the other. I'm to the point now, and this is like the personal change that I'm making, is that I'm going to speak up and at least tell them that's wrong. That will probably influence how they perceive me and not wanting to be around me as much anymore. That's fine. Because if somebody talks that way, I don't really want to be around them anyway. You know?
Yeah.
So I think the main thing with me has been automatically being lumped into a group of this white privileged male who runs society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if I'm ever going to shake that other than through people knowing me.
Yeah.
And it goes into the whole thing that the whole part of inclusivity that we're talking about here is that stereotyping is bad. Our audience, me and you together, we have to look at everybody as people and as individuals. You can't always lump people into groups and expect them to act the same as what your preconceived notions are of that group.
Powerful. It just speaks for itself. Least minority, you know, characteristics you could have, but you know, it just goes to show you're still vulnerable to this profiling or these stereotypes that are dehumanizing or very undermining. You know, the intelligence comments, you know, saying that you have lesser intelligence just all because of your accent.
Yeah.
And you just being around other individuals who speak racistly or derogatory, like towards people of color or other minority groups. Again, I just think those actions really shed light on this idea that it's not an uncommon thing still in this country.
Yeah.
I mean,
people, when they feel comfortable thinking that somebody else thinks the same as they do, that's when they feel like they can just open up and say something.
Yeah.
You know, if me and you are standing side by side with somebody, they're probably not going to say that.
No.
But if I'm standing there by myself with that individual, and for whatever reason, they think that I'm agreeable with that, that's a different story. Dion, are you hopeful for change? What does change look like to you?
Change to me looks like education, which leads to a general understanding. I'm not saying everyone needs to believe in what I believe in, or we all got to have the same beliefs. But I think when it comes to civil rights or civil right issues, I think there should definitely be common ground and understanding for more people than what there is now. And that's goes back to, you know, these few recent cases. I think that there's too many people on opposite sides. And this is all about people being treated fairly. And I don't understand how it's so so difficult to come to an honest agreement for equality for people. So to me, change is educating people. So, and that could be hearing out what, again, what your minorities have to say, your friends, what the public is shouting out, putting yourself in their shoes and understanding why they feel the way they feel. Because it's hard for change to actually happen if you can't do that. I'm hopeful for it. I'm seeing it happen. I think I'm actually one of those people who is beginning to turn into that. I work on it myself because, you know, there are some issues that I didn't personally agree with, but after learning about their struggles or so and putting myself in their shoes, I mean, it just becomes clear that the way I was thinking was more of an oppressive manner. So, and now I don't even consider those thoughts anymore because they're not right.
If people that are listening, they approach how they deal with diversity and inclusion like they have with adaptive management and natural resources.
Yeah.
And they just make tweaks here and there, make major changes when needed, adapt to a new situation, test the system, figure out the results, make tweaks here and there, we're going to be better for it.
I would like to add too that there are small things that don't actually help anything, and then there are actual real changes.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, sport teams changing their names, like that's cool and all, but those doesn't stop police brutality or inequality in uncomfortable environments in the workspace.
Yeah.
I don't consider those things necessarily change. I don't think I could tell you what we would need to do systemically to produce change. I do know time is a big factor. Both sides need to be weary of that because these are big issues that are centered around a long time of being in effect. So,
yeah. So, you know, in all these episodes, we want to always tie this back to fisheries and aquatic sciences somehow. We've seen giant strides in our profession, but how can we make people of color, gender backgrounds, different religions, all disabilities, all these diverse backgrounds, how can we make people feel welcome in meetings and in everyday jobs? And I think that is how this applies directly to the American Fisheries Society. If there's a minority presence in your meeting, be genuine. The key is you got to be genuine in all this. Don't just walk up to somebody and say hello and not be genuine about it. People pick up on those things. You know what I mean? So I think that's key to make people feel included is to have genuine conversations.
Yep.
Asking what they do, having conversations about their research. And if that is one small step that could make a big difference in somebody's experience within American Fisheries Society is to have those genuine conversations.
To tie in also with fisheries, you know, the more me being at this office is beneficial in another sense that, you know, everyone here gets to, they're surrounded, mandatorily surrounded by a person of color now. In your workspace, you know, the environment can change if you allow it. So the people here being surrounded by me or me being involved with their lives now, they firsthand experience a person of color in their workspace. So what that could necessarily mean is what they're seeing my cultural beliefs now or my, like how I go about my life and how I view the world, because we're essentially close. And especially being in fisheries, you know, going out shocking at night and our drives to the sites, we get to just talk about things. Those are just great opportunities to let people at your job hear your thoughts on the world. They get to see what makes you comfortable, what makes you uncomfortable. Now, when I leave here, it's nothing new when another person of color ends up showing up, because now they have that experience, more or less.
Yeah, experience. They have. That's why building diversity in the workplace is so important.
Yeah, yep. It's so difficult to understand people when you're not around a group of people people when you're not around them. So, you know, that goes for anyone. Well, because there's a big difference in how rural area people believe and urban people believe. Yeah. And when you, you know, when you just surround yourself with people like that and you become close, their perspectives on things become clear because you're seeing that.
Well, Dion, thanks for all your insights and past experiences. That's what this podcast is all about. Really good stuff lined up for future podcasts. One of our next episodes will focus on Black Lives Matter movement. We touched on it a little bit, but we're not professionals in this sense. But Gerard Green is, and he's the Associate Director for Multicultural Programs at Clemson University's Gantt Multicultural Center. So we're going to sit down and chat with him within the next couple weeks. That'll be a future podcast. We're also going to have a really cool conversation with a kind of a new initiative, the Ladies of the Minorities in Shark Sciences. We're going to sit down and speak with the executive board of that organization, and that's going to be fun. How to advise diverse undergraduate students and graduate students, and there are some professors out there who have lots of experience with this and can really give some really good information from their experiences. We're going to have a guest talking about how to recruit diversity into the profession. We're going to take a deep dive into the Hutton program. You know, we touched on inclusivity at meetings, Dion.
Yep.
What else do you think we should have in this podcast, Dion?
So something that we've discussed before that I'm passionate about is, you know, religion in the sciences. So that would fall within fisheries. Some other good topics I feel would be white privilege. That's another good concept to just talk about and how it's very relevant amongst, you know, employment and in the economy itself.
And that's specific to, like, there's a really good book out there called White Fragility. In successes of diversity, that's going to be really important moving forward. Sharing tangible best case practices and tips. Thinking about new hiring practices, considering like double blind hiring practices, which is far out there for a lot of people. Perception of diversity inclusion as lowering standards. We need to put that idea to rest. But like I said, we're always going to try to put this in the context of fisheries because that's who we are and what we are.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some of this stuff that we're going to lump together. Implicit bias, microaggressions, social blame. And then we're going to have these awesome success stories like the Emily Moore Prize winners.
I'm excited to go over all of these topics. The list can go on. There are endless topics for us to talk about. These inequalities and scenarios, unfortunately, will be relevant throughout the majority of our lifetimes. But I'm really looking forward to discussing these successful stories that you had mentioned, Aaron. I think that's a great, these are great positive experiences to bring out. We definitely don't want anyone to feel like there's no hope, can't do something. So it's great to hear some successful people talk about their experiences because they could have had some rough times leading up to their success. So
yeah, everybody has a personal journey, and the key for everybody is listening and don't judge a book by its cover.
Absolutely.
Figure out what's in there for yourself. Get to know people and be genuine. I think we can call it a day with our first ever Fish Diversity podcast. Dion, it's been awesome hanging out with you. It's been awesome hearing your experiences. I look forward to all of our discussions in the future.
Special thanks to the American Fisheries Society for hosting this podcast on www.fisheries.org and providing support to maintain the podcast. This episode was produced and edited by Aaron Bunch, myself, and Dion Kerr. The custom lo-fi music beat was crafted by Darius Armstrong. Look for his music name, Karl Marx, on www.karlmarx.bandcamp.com/releases. We are very grateful to all of those AFS leaders and members who have provided support and feedback as we have brought this podcast to life.